Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. Obviously, it's not just me on the podcast today. We've got a very special guest who I will let him have the floor in a minute to introduce himself. But I want to say thank you for coming back to the podcast, as always. If you have any questions, if you want to contact me, you can do so on my social medias at Zoe Discovers, at Zoe Discovers NK, or ZoeDiscovers@gmail.com. Okay, got all of that out the way. So now we can finally start to enjoy this episode of the podcast. Rob, do you want to introduce yourself? Tell our listeners, our viewers also about yourself, because if you guys do watch stuff on YouTube, we are currently recording this visually as well. So if you would like to see our handsome faces, then do head over to YouTube to listen to this. Rob, take it away.
Thank you for the compliment. I'm Rob Thomas. I go by Rob Thomas, not the musician of Matchbox 20, but I'll take the attention. My American band from the early 2000s, late 90s, my age group. But from Tennessee in the United States, and my family and I worked in North Korea for about 2 years, and helping, you know, facilitate some humanitarian work related to farming, construction, and even had a hand in tourism, but mainly humanitarian side of things. And I have a background in construction and a background as a university professor and background in business and real estate. So I was able to kind of be active in several areas of economy and development and stuff like that. And we're now currently in South Korea, and in the process of trying to regain our language, because pretty much from 2016 all the way through, you know, COVID pandemic, we were stuck in the United States. And if you don't use it, you lose it. We lost our language acquisition in so many ways. Not a whole lot of opportunities to practice Korean in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. As you know, might be a surprise for some people, but maybe not. Although one of the highest concentrations of Korean population is not too far from us in Atlanta, Georgia. So there's one of the highest concentrations of Korean Americans in the United States, outside of California and stuff like that. But so we're just in that process. We got back November 2022, and this time we came back with a second child. We before then only had one child, so but we can talk about that more or whenever. We had taken our kid into North Korea, and that was pretty fun too. Actually, it was the bridge builder, I think, with the people.
Definitely. And I think so. Rob or Rob Thomas, how do you want me to call you? Do you want me to do the full thing? Rob Thomas.
Rob.
Yeah. Rob. Okay, Rob cool. The famous artist.
Rob's cool.
I actually appeared on one of your podcast episodes, which feel free to plug if you want. And we kind of chatted. That was one of the things that like we chatted about first. That really like yeah, there it is up there. we kind of chatted about a lot of stuff, and that was one of the things that like really interested me. And I think will interest a lot of our listeners. Is the fact that you not just went to North Korea. Actually, it is very different because I go in and out of North Korea a lot. But you stayed in North Korea for a long period of time. And not only did you stay in North Korea for a long period of time and live there, but you also did a lot of really interesting and crazy stuff and also had your entire family there. So this is like, so bizarre to me on so many levels and so new and so interesting that I don't know, maybe okay, let's start from the beginning. It's a very good place to start. How did this come about? How does an American decide that they're gonna take their family to North Korea? What is it that you do there? Start at the what was it? How did we get to this point?
It was about 2012 when my wife and I were in a process of exploring our options for our lives. And I had been a university professor at Taylor University in Indiana. And we had decided that my wife would pursue a management position in Tennessee. So that was, which is where I'm from, but that was kind of the catalyst for our relocation from Indiana to Tennessee. And that began really the process of our connections to the Korean Peninsula. I think we both knew when we first met that we were going to be somewhere else in the world. And, you know, we didn't know at the time if it was going to be kind of in short durations or just kind of, you know, decades at a time or whatever. But we knew international travel and exploration and engagement was going to be part of our lives. And
is that because you liked travel, or is that because you just had a feeling, or what was it that gave you that sense?
Multiple things, I'd say. I've always had a bit of a travel lust. I've always had an interest in the world. Even all through college, I would, you know, try to get all my studies done and try to get off work on the weekends so I could drive from Tennessee either down to the Panhandle in Florida. I would camp out on the beach and then the next morning drive right back up for university classes, or I'd go to the East Coast. And I like to be outdoors. I like to be kind of in the world. And so that's one part of it. And the other part is our faith. My wife and I are, you know, active Christians. And so that's, you know, a really important part to our faith is, you know, actually what Jesus said, to go into all nations. Mm-hmm. So it's for us exercising our religion on one hand, and then the other hand is, you know, it just satisfies interest in the world. And I think it's more exciting, you know, just for me, I get so bored being in one place too long. I like interacting with people of all backgrounds, and I like to try new foods. I like different cultures, and that probably goes back to maybe in some way, and I think about this still now, but as a kid growing up, I was born in Memphis, and then we moved to Chicago, then we moved to New Orleans, and then we moved. So, you know, several pivotal places growing up, you know, very culturally diverse places, rich in music and food. And, you know, New Orleans was really, you know, long lasting in my memory. I remember as a kid, you might've heard of Mardi Gras, just a time of the year before Lent. And that leads up to Easter. You know, it's actually, you know, part of a religious, a Christian history, and it's a nutty time. It's just crazy. And that had a long lasting impression on me. But part of that was, you know, seeing all kinds of people, you know, celebrate together, have fun together, break bread together. And I just love that interaction, that diversity, and coming together, you know. And so, yeah, those are kind of the ideas and motivations that kind of compel us, my wife and my family and I, to be out and in the world.
I would say you're that. definitely preaching to the choir here. Like, I completely agree with all the things you're saying. So, but why? Okay, so you were. Where were we in the chronicle?
Gearing up. How did North Korea, Korean Peninsula,
right, exactly.
Get on our radar? So yeah, 2012-ish, we had a friend who had just come back to America after spending a summer in Seoul, and she spent the summer there, you know, learning Korean culture. She had an interest in South Korean culture at the time. Somehow that got on her radar while in college, and she just shared her experience actually with us, and we're like, man, we got to check this out. We had at the time, I think we both knew that, you know, there was a North Korea, South Korea, but we didn't really know so much past that, beyond that there was a Korean War, the cause of the divide. But when our friend came back and said, you know, she gave us more insight into the dynamics involved with the Korean Peninsula and the situation since the Korean War, we were like, we have to go. And we had actually already bought plane tickets to Thailand. And we're like, since we're going to be on that side of the world, let's try to make it on up to Seoul. And so we did. And we spent about 7 to 10 days in Seoul, kind of meeting our friends and her connections. And we're like, wow, how do we get into the North? It just kind of kept making us more curious. And so the last night we were there, we met someone who was engaged with, you know, tourism and agriculture and stuff. And he invited us to come back, you know, as tourists. And wish I could remember his name. It's been like 7-8 years ago. So
it's fine, I'll let you off.
But so yeah, six months after that return, we had tickets to come back to China to get into North Korea. And so we did that. We spent about 3 weeks in the region, the Yanbian, Yanji, China area. And so 1 week in China, 1 week in North Korea, followed by another week back in China to kind of think about everything, to kind of assess, you know, and get to meet people. And I found that area of where China meets Russia, meets North Korea, incredibly interesting. It was like a very unique diaspora, a melting pot of Russians and Chinese and Mongolian and North Koreans. And, you know, that's where we had a couple meals at North Korean run restaurants in Yanji. And I even saw like North Korean officials walking the street, and I was like, this is so bizarre, you know, I didn't think this would be possible.
Right. And like Yanji is so interesting to me. Like, I remember when I first got there, and like, all of the signs are in both Korean and Chinese, and it does feel very bizarre. And for those that don't know, I mean, Yanji is like, to kind of give you some visuals and stuff, Yanji borders, or like this area of North Korea, it's like on a tri-border, right? So you've got Russia, China, and North Korea all at the top. So it is really, really northern China, some of the most northern that you can go. And it is freezing. Like, I don't know when you went, but I went in February and it was very, very cold. But the interesting place about this is, that I want to ask you as well, is that to go to, this is where you enter North Korea from. You go, this is mm-hmm. where you enter Rason from. You go from Yeonji in Yeonbian province and right high up, and then go into Rason, not Pyongyang, because when you go into Pyongyang, mm-hmm. You enter from a much more southern location, which is called Dandong, and from there you cross over the Yalu Bridge, right? But when you cross mm-hmm. over in Yeonji, you go to Rason, which is a really interesting place in North Korea. It's a special economic zone. Even the border alone is interesting because sometimes you're able to literally just walk over the border. It's a place where they give you stamps. I don't think that they give American citizens stamps, but it's a place where they give other citizens stamps. You didn't get a stamp. No. It's just a really interesting area. And so where did Rason come from? I guess you went to Rason, right? Where did Rason yeah, mm-hmm. come from? Like, why was it not Pyongyang? What happened there?
That's where the tourism agency was headquartered. Rason. And so we went there, and their mission is in part doing tourism with kind of service projects sometimes. So they've done tree planting and agriculture and goat farming and stuff like that. And it becomes, I think, a genuine asset to the people, the area. And it's kind of combining this idea with traveling with a purpose and kind of service-minded traveling. And that really, fed into, and that's, we agreed with that. That meshed really well with our philosophy and our worldview. And so that's how we got connected, or, what brought us there. And, I know a lot of people, I don't need anybody else to tell me we're crazy possibly for taking a kid, but when we went in as tourists, there were a handful of families with kids, and contrary to belief, from our experience, traveling with kids actually makes so much easier. And I think a lot of when you travel to a place that is still technically at war with your home country, there's a lot of preconceptions that are natural, that are formed by media. And, we have to remember as people that, media is an industry that makes money off bad news. They can't really make ends meet if they just cover true good news.
Yeah.
They really focus in on the negative hyperbolic kind of information. But it was very different. I ask some people when I'm speaking to groups or whatever, what images come to mind when you think about North Korea? And we get the common responses, marching soldiers, military parades, artillery, whatever. And then I show them pictures from our experiences, which don't have any of that. We never saw any of that. We never saw military parades. We saw very few military, but we never saw like artillery. And I've seen probably more military actually in South Korea than I ever saw in North Korea. It was very just, different night and day compared to how the world kind of thinks of it.
I think because we have like a lot of American listeners actually on the podcast, like half the listeners are actually from the US, so maybe we can stick on the US side of things for a minute. I'm just curious for you, like as a US citizen, like obviously you went before the travel ban, so it's kind of slightly slightly different because you could go and you can't go right now because of the travel ban, but obviously because of that tensions are a little bit higher. But did you feel scared going in as a US citizen? Did you have any extra preconceptions? Like, I don't know, were the other people on your group also from the US? Did the North Koreans treat you any differently? Did they talk to you about the US, ask you about politics? Did you talk politics with them? Just talk to me a little bit about the US perspective of things.
Yeah, I would say there was a little bit of anxiousness, gearing up the first time when we went to North Korea. And that's because our idea of the place was formed by you know, just images from the news and the internet. But we also had to kind of balance that out, stories from people who had gone before us and which were very different from those images. And actually, when we did go as tourists, we had not yet had our first child, so that made it a little easier.
Right.
So we go, and you know, the people were very welcoming in our experience. You know, they're very cordial, very the North Koreans are very jovial and warm, actually, people in our experience. And you know, I don't know why that would be, other than that that is how they treat foreigners in our experience. And I know there are stories that are very contrary to that and have very detrimental, you know, experiences. And but that wasn't our experience ever. And the people we actually went with the first time we went, there was tourist groups from European countries, you know, like the Netherlands, Holland, Germany, France. We had people from the Philippines, Canada. I think one person from Brazil. So it is a very,
very diverse
multi-ethnic group. It's about 22 people when we went. And the UK, actually, yeah, you were represented there. and so I think that was a very interesting picture, because I think back on that, because you know, North Korea is known to be the most homogenous culture in the world. And you know, then this tour bus rolls into town, and then you have a very multi-ethnic group of people, you know, Black, white, Latino, Asian, you know, kind of all represented getting off the bus. And I think that's a beautiful picture. You know, that's kind of unity at work. And, you know, I think back, you know, what might the North Koreans be thinking about that when they see these people from all over the world, you know, kind of unified and getting along, coming to their country? That's a question I would like to ask them one day. Maybe a tour guide or something like that.
Definitely.
But yeah,
go on, sorry.
I was just gonna say that, and the food was great. You know, we had a lot of goburo and, you know, deep fried pork with a sweet sauce on it, and malatang and eggplant fried rice and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, I actually had malatang today, so
really nice. I actually had I didn't have it yet today, but this week I had Pyongyang cold noodles, actually, which is a very famous famous North Korean dish. I'm sure you'll probably miss it. I won't explain what they are, because it's literally written on the tin, you know. They are literally just cold noodles, very famous though. But just on what you were saying, then I think, like, and what you've touched on a little bit before, is the kind of importance of, like, just engaging on, like, a people level, and how important it is that the North Koreans just, like, see foreigners, you know. I think that, like, a massive change can be done, or, like, you know, it makes a massive difference, the North Koreans just seeing foreigners alone, whether they get to speak to them or not. I think that it really helps see foreigners in a light that's, like, with their own eyes, just like it helps when we see North Korea with our own eyes and not through the media lens and stuff like that. It's the same with the North Koreans, because obviously they have their own propaganda as well. And it's funny, because you said, you know, you went to Rason, and one of my clear images from Rason, because weirdly enough, it was the first place that I went to as well. And a lot of your story really resonates with me. It's quite bizarre how many crossovers there are with such a unique story, to be honest. So it's quite bizarre. But the first place I went to was Rason, which is a weird place to go to, because hardly ever anyone ever visits there. You walk around the park, and I don't know if you walked around the park in Rason. I think there's only one park. It has a the one with, like, has a playground, and then you walk further down it and you get to the sea. And it also has like a 4D cinema in it. Have you been there before? It has like a skate park,
I think. Not to the cinema, no.
Okay, mm-hmm. have you been walked around the park at all, or you have no recollection?
I don't know if it was the same park or the one. There was one with a school that I'm familiar with.
That's the thing. It has a school in there. I think it has like a school playground in there as well. And this is what I was about to mention, because all over the school playground, like, walls are like anti-American propaganda. And it's very much like, you know, you have these American soldiers with big noses and stuff like that. That's how they're typically represented in Korean propaganda, being literally like brutally murdered by a Korean soldier, or, you know, whatever it is. And I think like this is the view that the North Koreans have of the Japanese, or of the Americans. Actually, usually it's the Americans like brutally murdering someone else, right? Like, you know, they're always very they're always depicted as very angry and very brutal and stuff like that, or you have them with, like, you know, their head on a stick or something like that, and it's awful. And this is the kind of stuff that you see like in schools, on school walls and stuff like that. And so it is done, I should say that it is done in like a cartoon fashion. I don't know if I'm making this worse or better for myself, but it's done in like a way that it's not very lifelike. You know, it is kind of cartoony, mm-hmm. and it is still a kid's playground, so it's very colorful and stuff like that. Man, I'm gonna have to put some pictures up on so people don't think that this is crazy. But this is the view that North Koreans have of Americans, and this is what's in their textbooks and stuff like that. And so it's just so nice for an American to be able to go there, and for the Koreans to see like, oh, okay, they're like a normal person, and they smile and they talk like us, like a normal person. And it works both ways. I think that that's how we feel about the North Koreans as well. You know, a lot of people, you know, kind of find it weird to think like, oh, hey, like they are just kind of like us, like they're normal people, and they're not these people who are talking about military all the time, and they're not all soldiers and stuff like that. So yeah, that's just my thought on that. But you didn't see these any of these pictures when you were there, or?
No, I didn't see the paintings or the murals.
Never mind.
But no, we did walk around. I mean, we lived there for 2 years, so we saw a lot of it. Mm. But, you know, when we did move there and we lived there, we would usually go in 2 to 3 weeks at a time,
right?
Do our work and come back out to China, get some more supplies, food, whatever. Mm. Baby needs stuff. And then go back in. The, you know, longest we stayed was 6 months or so. It was close to that. And I think that actually being there for that long duration of time, things got easier. You know, actually, right. You know, we got into this rhythm, this routine. You know, this is how it is. This is how, you know, life is going to work here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, actually having a child there, we were able to befriend other families, you know, North Korean families who had kids. And so the kids don't come in with these preconceptions. The kids, yeah. They see each other, and there's like this kind of symbiotic recognition, like, wow, you're a kid, I'm a kid, hello. And, you know, they don't know the language, of course, but they start interacting, you know, very playfully.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you know, that's what it's about. It's kind of like a little glimpse of the potential hope between North Korea and the world, North Korea and the United States, whatever. And I think, you know, families are great facilitators of unity, you know, when they work together as a unit. And it's not to say, you know, couples and singles, whatever, groups, whatever, but I think, you know, we need all kind of working together. And yeah, I was, you know, when I tell people that, you know, actually things are easier as a family, contrary to what a lot of people may think, it's it's not as difficult as what a lot of people would think it is. It is, I will say, it's challenging, no doubt. It's challenging to live there, but it was very possible. Mm. And what made it easier for us is what I'm trying to say is actually being a family. Because I think, you know, whenever you see a family with a young baby, there's most people are a little more tolerant and patient with that, with that unit of people, and maybe forgiving in a lot of ways, you know.
It is such more, it's such more of a, like a human, much more of a human experience. It's lovely. I can't wait one day. Maybe I'll have my own family, bring them into North Korea in the future, long in the future. Before, like, this is the kind of stuff that I really want to talk about, but before, like, I get more into you and your family in North Korea, how did we get to working in North Korea? Like, how did that come about? And, you know, how did you guys decide, okay, this is what we want to do? And also, how did it kind of then end? Do you, was it the travel ban? Do you intend on going in? Let me, chat away on that.
Well, actually, the company we went in with as tourists was engaged in construction projects and other things. And with my background in construction, you know, that was the connection. And I grew up in a family that does real estate and construction because they really are hand in hand. You know, you need construction to build the houses, you need real estate to sell the houses. So that's kind of my family experience. And so that was the way we got in. We were able to get permission because of my background in construction, but also as a university professor. And we had discussed maybe trying to develop a cultural educational exchange, you know, kind of thinking big picture, long term. And this still may happen, I don't know, where we try to develop and get granted permission to do study abroad programs in North Korea, where students from other universities around the world could come there, learn, and then, you know, get their college credits and then go back to their home country after 1 or 3 months. Because there's the universities I've worked at and gone to, they have sometimes 1 month options, sometimes 3 month options where you can get 3 credit hours or up to 12 or 15 credit hours in a few months or something like that. And I think that would be a really fascinating thing to develop is, I mean, imagine learning economics in a European country and then coming to, you know, China or North Korea and studying economics for 1 to 3 months and having a comparison to the different styles, different forms of economics and stuff like that. So anyway, but all that to say, that's how I got permission to go in was my background. And we were there with a business visitation visa. And that's how we could stay in country so long.
And you were working in Rasan, or you then went down to Pyongyang to work, or you do the whole time in Rasan?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The whole time was in Rasan, and I've never been to Pyongyang. Wow. It's on my bucket list.
Yeah, but, you definitely have to come to Pyongyang.
Yeah, yeah. You know a good tour guide?
If I know one, I'll let you know.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
All ears.
That is just crazy to me that you haven't been. So have you been, did you go anywhere up northeast? Because Raslin is in the northeast. Were you close to Mount Paektu? I mean, did you go to Mount Paektu at all? Did you go to Chongjin and stuff like that? You kind of went around in the northeast area or?
Yeah, we went to the place where the three countries come together, and
Very
we
cool. Yes.
would yeah, we'd go into Russia, 'cause when we're in China, we had to leave the country every 90 days, to do border
Yes.
runs, and that actually worked out really well. That worked out to our benefit because we could go into Russia, and that's where we bought our cheese, which is hard to find in
That's funny.
China. So
Yeah.
I would come back from Russia with like 8 to 12 pounds of cheese and give it to friends and stuff
Oh
like
my
that.
gosh. So would
That's a
you go
I would say
from North Korea into Russia or from China into Russia?
we'd go from China into Russia,
China into Russia. Okay.
and yeah, we'd go there, stay in a little town, in a hotel, and it was very interesting. I found that very intriguing in so many ways
Yeah.
because we didn't need a tour guide or anything to go into Russia. It may be different now because of the geopolitical tensions between United States and Russia. I have no idea if we can even get into Russia if we want to, but
Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
anyway, I know that's where you can get good cheese if you need it.
Excellent. And so
Yeah.
you were working there. What kind of work exactly were you doing? And
Yeah,
also, was it you
we
and
would
your wife, or was it just you working? Because you mentioned it was because of your background. So.
The whole family, would help as they could, and so we would help, do maintenance repairs on there's a farm there, and that was engaged with agriculture, so they were growing wheat and corn and basil and tomatoes, and they also had livestock, goats and stuff like that, and tree planting and honey. There was bee farm hive there, and hives, I would say.
So cool.
And so we help all the construction, maintenance, and development of the structures with those things. And also, as a university professor, I taught ceramics and sculpture, and I built a ceramic kiln, high temperature furnace, and that was kind of related to the whole tourism thing where we had started to explore, cultural art exchange initiatives. And what I would love to do at some point is, I don't know if you ever saw the art gallery in Rason. It was a North Korean
Yes,
art.
actually, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember there's something about a
And that's,
tiger. Maybe there was just a picture of a tiger in there. I don't know. That's my impression.
Seeing that gallery when I was there as a tourist is where some ideas started to come to mind where maybe we could do art exchanges. And I actually had a friend who, at one time in the earlier 2000s, been granted permission to get North Korean art from the country and have it exhibited on a gallery circuit in the United States. And, I thought of, I still do think of art as a bridge to all parts in the world, and that could relate naturally to tourism, and cultural exchange and stuff like that, and kind of even stretch it out even further, and maybe embrace, cuisine art and stuff like that, where you have chefs and cooks from different parts in the world kind of coming in, and then they could be sent out, from North Korea maybe at some point in the future. And just kind of exchange these art ideas, these art processes, and yeah, that's kind of the thinking that was going on and the things we were doing. And then 2016 happened, or actually earlier 2015 we found out we're going to have a second kid, and
How old
we
was
decided
your
to go
first
back
kid,
to the
sorry, at
United
this
States.
time? Your first kid was.
First one about 2 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Carry on,
Yeah.
sorry.
And so yeah, we decided at the end of 2015, beginning 2016, we'll go back to the United States, and then have our second child. and then raise some awareness and support to go back and kind of inform people. Wow, here's our experience. It's a lot different than what you might have heard about it. And then, you know, the travel ban came down 2017 for American citizens, and which is still in place. So we decided to stick in the United States, and then, you know, just raise money, raise support, raise awareness, and hope that travel ban would be amended or something over the next year or so. And then it just kind of kept going. And then COVID happened. And then we're like, wow.
I know.
I tell people now, looking back, I am glad we were in the United States during COVID. You know, I think for something like that, I being a family and having kids, being in a place that's familiar and close to family and whatever resources, if you're in a situation like a pandemic, no one really knew the severity and the extent that would be. So I'm kind of glad we're in the U.S. for that. But here we are, and, you know, and we're still trying to talk to our State Department about amending or abolishing the travel ban, and which I'm very much against.
Yeah, no, definitely. It is. It's been going on for far too long. First of all, North Korea needs to open up again after COVID. But that's definitely second on the agenda to try and get, because I very strongly believe in, as all we've been saying, you know, this kind of cultural engagement and how important just human to human connections are and stuff. So, it's a big shame. But I was wondering if we could go back to you. Working in North Korea, just to kind of flip things back. I'll try and keep it short because I don't want to keep you for too long. But you said that, you know, when you were going in, you would stay for like 2 or 3 weeks, but then also you had like a 6 month stint. Like, what was that like, going in for a short period and then a really long period? Why were you in there for 6 months? And oh my gosh, what is it like to live in North Korea for 6 months? Because the longest that I was there ever was 1 month. And to be honest, after that, I mean, I was working 1 month without one single break, pretty much. So I guess that was why I was very run down. But man, I was very run down. So how were you 6 months in North Korea?
I think, you know, the longer we were there, the more connections we made with the locals. Right. We made more connections. And because we were not there as tourists, we were there as specialists. We had a little more freedom. You know,
you could walk around by yourselves.
You know, our guide was with us.
Okay. Your guide was with you. Yeah.
You know, after a while, you know, we had a little more freedom, and I think after a while showing them that we were not going to do anything stupid to get them in trouble, you know, they were pretty relaxed on it. And
do you say, you know, relaxed on it, meaning like they did let you walk around by yourselves in the end, or a little bit, or not really? I'm just
a little
prying.
Bit. Yeah. Okay. I mean, you know, like I would say, they always knew where we were. I mean, there's no way for them not to know.
Yeah.
And we didn't, I mean, we knew that, but it didn't bother us. And I think, yeah, just the longer we were there, we, you know, found the restaurants we preferred. We found the food sources we could go to for, you know, eggs and flour. And, you know, actually we got pretty, pretty healthy because we're eating like non-GMO tomatoes and basil, and making bread from, you know, low gluten flour and stuff like that. You know, we just, you know, I came out looking, I was like, wow, you know. And then I went back to the United States and gained 30 pounds. You
know? Never mind.
Yeah. But yeah. And yeah. So yeah, the thing I actually learned was things got so much easier because we just got into a living rhythm. We made the connections with the locals and they recognized us. We got to meet, you know, got to know the same vendors in the market. And so we became kind of accepted in some ways. And I think that's the whole point behind the Rason area, the special economic zone. I think that is the intention behind, in part, North Korea government's purpose for that area. Mm. And in that way, I would say it's pretty successful.
Yeah. And why were you there for so long? Why were you there for 6 months? It's a very long time.
A myriad of construction jobs. Oh, wow. On the farm. It's a greenhouse. There's the kiln to build, the foundation for a building. And everything kind of moves slow. I mean, it's, sometimes electricity comes and goes, and you work when you can, and a lot of manual tools, which was great exercise, by the way.
Can imagine.
And we just moved at the pace we could. And that's kind of the time it took to do those projects.
And all of this time you were with your 2-year-old baby, or 1 to 2-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Very cute.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife. Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
And they would be around you. They'd help. They'd hang out with the locals when we're working and whatnot. And local kids would interact. And it became very natural in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think to be fair, I don't know what it's like where you're from, but in the West, I think, and in the UK at least, we've definitely lost that kind of value of neighbors helping out and stuff. And I think in East Asia, especially the kind of more rural places or smaller areas, and it's still very much got that kind of neighborly feel, and you're just helping each other out, borrowing things from each other's houses, or like looking after each other's babies. Did you get that kind of feel at all in North Korea as well? Like, was the neighbors kind of just picking up your baby and just chilling out with them and playing with them and stuff? Was there that kind of rural feel to it, or was it still a bit standoffish?
No, I think having the kids I saw from the expats who came in as tourists or whatever, the kids were immediately received.
Aww.
Like the kids were just like magnets. They really broke down a lot of suspicion or speculation from the locals. And, because of that, tensions and anxiety and doubt and worry just go down. When you people pick up on those feelings pretty fast.
Mm.
And I think we were always warmly accepted as a family.
Mm.
And I do remember kind of walking here and there alone, and some people, locals, might look at me, especially in the winter when I'm wearing like a Russian style hat. I think they look at me like, are you Russian? Are you American? Mm. What are you?
Mm.
And then, my kid would come walking, run up and grab my leg. And, the locals see the kid and they forget me, which I'm okay with. But,
And that reminds me as well. I mean, they probably thought that you were Russian because it makes much more sense for a Russian to be right near to the Russian border and in North Korea than it does for an American. Right. And it happens to me all the time. It's really funny. Whenever I'm in Taiwan, people will always be like, oh, are you from America? And I'm like, no. But then when I'm in mainland China, it's all the time. It's, oh, are you from Russia? Or like people start talking to me in Russian and I'm like, oh. And it makes sense. Cause I guess the way that I look and stuff, it's more likely that I'm Russian when I'm in China because they have a lot more Russians, especially in the Northeast. And then in Taiwan, there's more Americans. But I'm neither, so never mind. I was just going to say something. Oh, yeah, I had a question, actually. And, of course, absolutely no problem if you have no idea. But because you have an experience kind of with the farming kind of community in North Korea, I don't know if you know in North Korea, basically everyone has to go to the farm. And just for the benefit of our listeners as well, how this works is basically like in peak season, peak farming season around like March to May kind of time, I think from memory, all of the city people are basically sent to the farms. And it sounds horrific, but actually some of the people really enjoy it. Some of the guys and girls really love it because like they get out of the city, they get to like chill at a farmer's house for 2 weeks. Mainly the girls do a lot of like cooking and cleaning, and then the boys will like go out and do like the hands-on kind of work and stuff. Some of them hate it because they get an awful tan being out in the sun all day, stuff like this. I'm speaking from the experience of the Pyongyang colleagues and friends I know that, you know, they tell me, oh, like, I'm going to the farm next week, like, oh, no, or some of them are really excited. I'm wondering, in Rason, did you meet any of these city people working on the farms, or did you see any of this at all, or just not at all?
Mm-mm. No, I didn't hear or see any of that. It was the same people working the farm year round. And so we became friends with them because we were always crossing paths and whatnot. But I don't remember like the number of farmers going up during farming season.
Yeah.
And where we were, we actually had access to equipment. We had like John Deere tractors and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. It's very different.
Yeah. So we had, yeah. And, yeah, very quite developed process where we were.
Right. Yeah.
And I think could be proximity to China. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I think in maybe some more of the rural locations, then maybe, you know, a lot of it is very manual. And, you know, the Koreans will always tell me, like, they really appreciate every grain of rice that they eat on their plate because, like, they remember planting every single grain of rice. Definitely has some value in that. But, before we, there's just so much to talk about, but I'm really interested in something that you kind of said at the start. Obviously, you know, you and your family are religious and stuff, and that doesn't necessarily gel with working in North Korea, or that doesn't necessarily gel, not working with North Korea, but, you know, North Korea is obviously not very well known for its religious freedom and stuff like that. I'm wondering how you kind of got around, you know, Bibles are strictly forbidden from entering North Korea. I'm wondering how you kind of got around this and how you dealt with being a Christian in North Korea how you kind of went about that, you and your family.
That's a good question. We actually did not experience any pushback on our faith in the country. Actually, our experience was just the opposite, in the sense that when we would get to the border, if they saw how we were working, you know, by looking at our passport, those in our group, whatever, they would anticipate we were Christian. Like they had this idea that if you're American, you're Christian. And I mean, being American, you know, America is not a Christian nation. I know that because I can just look at the headlines and there's nothing symbiotic or, you know, synonymous with the faith, very little. And it's a little different when you go back to the history, but they would say, all right, if you're expat or you're a foreigner, go ahead and stack your Bibles up here. They were anticipating us bringing Bibles.
Okay.
In. And so we could bring Bibles in. We'd bring our one Bible. But you know, we were not on the street, you know, on the corner handing out tracts or anything like that. That's just not our style. But you know, we share our faith by how we live. And, you know, if people ask, we'll talk about that. We had no one ever told us from the government that you can't do this. You can't bring your Bible. You can't be Christian. That was not our experience. And actually, you know, when we go to restaurants, like anywhere else, we would, you know, say a prayer blessing over the meal. And we did that the whole time. And that was never pushed back on in our experience. And I think that was just because maybe they, as a country or government, local government, they anticipated that we were going to be Christian. So in some ways, it made it actually easier for us to be who we naturally are and who we really are. And so yeah, it was very different. That's another misconception that I talk about sometimes when I'm talking to groups in the U.S. or whatever. You know, like, you wouldn't believe this, but they actually anticipate us to have Bibles when we get to the border. I don't know. Is that different when you go to the capital, Pyongyang? Do they say do not bring Bibles?
Yeah, it's wildly difficult, different actually, and difficult. And I don't know whether it's a time difference thing as well. I don't know whether it's because, you know, some things in North Korea tourism, they change a lot of the time, and mostly it gets less strict, right? So, you know, 10 years ago, you couldn't take photos from a bus and you couldn't bring your mobile phone in and stuff. The rules change all the time. Usually it gets less strict. I'm wondering if 10 years ago, things were less strict, or, you know, a few years ago, even things were less strict on Bibles, and then something happened to make them more strict on Bibles, or whether it's just in Rason they're more chilled out about Bibles, or whether it's because you were on a business visa and doing different things from tourism. Because in Pyongyang, it is like the most strict thing. Like if I was to tell someone what is the one thing that you're not allowed to bring in, I'm like, it's a Bible. You know, you get into a lot of trouble, and it's not worth sneaking it in. It's not worth any of the trouble. It's a really serious thing to bring in a Bible to Pyongyang. And as far as I know, the rest of the country. So, and that's been like that since I started working in the country, like, I guess in 2017 or 2018. So, yeah, I don't know whether it's a, maybe it's a mixture of things. Maybe something happened at some point as well to kind of make it a lot more strict. But for sure, as a tourist, at least, and going in through Pyongyang, it's a very big no on the Bibles. And it's the one thing, if they ask you anything on the train when you're going in, it's the one thing they always ask you for as well. You know, the customs guards will be shouting around like, Bibles, Bibles. And I'm just like, everyone say no. Bibles and GPS are the two things. So it's very interesting to have those very two different experiences. There are two churches, or three churches, in Pyongyang. I think one of them is a Russian Orthodox church, and it's definitely a functioning church. Did you see any churches in Rason?
No. No churches that I saw. No.
And did you ever talk to any of the North Koreans about Christianity or religion? Were they ever curious about it, or was that the kind of line that you drew?
Well, they would ask me, you know, like, why are you here? You know, like, what are you doing? And I'd be like, well, I love people and I love God and I want to serve God, and I can love God and serve God by loving and serving people. And so that's a real answer. You know, that's kind of the thesis behind what compels us. And and they seem to be like, okay, well, that's interesting. And that was about as far as it'd go.
Cool.
So it was a non-confrontational discourse.
Yeah. Well, that's really nice. And I suppose just before we kind of finish up things, I don't know if you have obviously, if you have any different stories or anything you want to mention, but also I'm interested in your future plans. What is in the future? Is North Korea still in your future? In your family's future? Will your second child ever get to see North Korea? So you're hoping so, or what's the plan?
Yeah, we hope and we plan. You know, North Korea is in the cards, and we're in communication with our own government in the United States, as far as state representatives, senators, congressmen go, to try to, I would say, just abolish any travel ban, because it's unconstitutional, which is a very American phrase.
Yeah, this is unconstitutional. Yeah, this is one of the things that really shocks me about the travel ban, is that no Americans seem to care that, like, you know, Americans love to have their rights, and Americans love to, you know, as a British person, this is our stereotypical view, is like, Americans don't like being told what to do. So to suddenly be not permitted to go to a country, I'm like, why does no one care about this?
Right. And, you know, it's a handful of countries. It's not just North Korea, but there's a handful of countries that American citizens are told, you know, if you go, then you can, you know, risk losing your passport or fines or maybe jail time. I'm like, that's so antithetical to Americanism,
right.
Just to limit citizens from freely traveling. And so, yeah, we're kind of playing it one day at a time, so to speak. And as we try to, you know, get better with our Korean language, regain the language that we lost, teach the language to our second child and our first child again. And, you know, so that's where we are. But gosh, I would love for access to the North happen from the South. Like I that just makes more
that's
sense. And I think, you know, it could happen through business. It can happen through cultural exchanges, and it can just start small and, you know, go from there. But you know, where I'm from in the United States, you probably heard of the car company Ford.
Yep.
And they have relocated from Michigan, or in the process, to Tennessee, where I'm from, and they're building like $11 billion electric car factory. And there's a South Korean battery company that's going to be producing and manufacturing all the batteries. So they're building their facility in Tennessee. And I'm with my experience in real estate, I would love to kind of help make the connection between, you know, the Korean Peninsula and the United States through some sort of business venture like that, that might help lessen geopolitical tensions. But you know, it's just kind of pie in the sky at this time, but that's the aspiration.
And then I guess you have not only the travel ban, but also sanctions to deal with as well, which is, of course, another fun topic surrounding Korea.
Yes, I think it's another.
Yeah. Your first child, so just from what you just said, your first child, did they pick up Korean whilst they were there? And of course, did they have a little bit of a North Korean accent?
I wouldn't say accent, but they...
Oh, dialect.
She,
yeah.
She still has a very strong affinity for seaweed. She loves it.
Oh wow!
So that's where it comes from. Yeah. So if we go to a restaurant or a friend's house, she always likes to take her own little package of seaweed.
No way! That's the cutest thing.
That came from being there. Actually,
oh, wow.
You know, she just that and rice. That was pretty much what she just loved to eat. And those were the foods that she just ate. She just loved it and still does.
I love that.
So,
that's beautiful.
So simple. You know, it's food kind of bridging the gap in some ways. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I've kept you for a while. Did you have anything you wanted to add? Did you have anything else you wanted to mention? Or also feel free to, you know, give your own podcast, give yourself your own plug and stuff like that. Where can listeners go if they want to find out more?
I would say if you are in the United States, something that comes right to mind is get familiar with the bill HR 1369, put together by Congressman Brad Sherman out of California. And because, you know, that it's informally, I think, called the Peace on the Korean Peninsula Act, and that would help actually end formally the Korean War. And if that happens, when that happens, accessing the North from the South and vice versa might actually be possible. But we have to get that done first. We have to formally end the Korean War that, you know, ended in 1953. And, you know, Americans in the world, really, the Korean War is also known as the Forgotten War, and we have forgotten that it's still technically on. But you know, get familiar with HR 1369. Try to inform your state reps and congressmen, senators, to get behind that. And you know, this should be a bipartisan thing. I would hope it would be. What's wrong with peace? You know, But yeah, anybody wants to get in touch with me, you can go where am I? Right here. I got all the links right there. You know, link in the link tree. So Wamok is a Korean word for reconciliation.
Ah, but you don't use the word for reunification, Tongil. You use reconciliation, Hwamok.
Yeah,
Interesting.
it actually comes from a Korean Bible, and
Ah.
it's a specific word for reconciliation. It's a reconciliation between people and people with God.
Oh, that's
And
lovely.
so it's unique in that sense.
Yeah. For people that aren't seeing this but only listening, that's a link tree. So link, well, I'll spell that out, linktr.ee/Hwamok, which is WH, oh, no, which is HWAMOK. So that's
Yeah.
linktr.ee/HWAMOK.
Thank
Beautiful.
you.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you all at home
Mm-hmm.
for listening. Thank you for coming back to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you have any questions, if you have any comments on today's podcast, on any of the other previous podcasts or anyone else you'd like to see as a guest, then please do send me an email on zoediscovers@gmail.com or message me on Instagram on @zoediscovers. Thank you, Rob. Thank you so much for joining today. It was an absolute pleasure. So hopefully
Well,
speak
thank
to
you,
you again
Zoe.
sometime soon.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Maybe we could do a podcast from North Korea someday.
A North Korea podcast. I would like to do a podcast in North Korea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Podcast in North Korea someday.
Awesome.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. Warbyparker.com/covered.